Let's speak to Ian Brown, Policy Director at the rail campaign group Rail Future. And Ian's also former Managing Director of London Rail and Transport for London. John Henderson is also with us. He's a member of the Bedford Commuters Association, which represents rail users in Bedfordshire. Good morning, both of you.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So, Ian, the review, it's inspired, isn't it, by the DLR and the Overground that you worked on. So tell me a bit about how that system works.
I think what happened in London was that the buses are regulated, the fares are fixed by the mayor, and the issue was to grow the economy of the City of London, which required the railway to actually respond to these economic, social and environmental, dare I say, needs. So it was a different model where we had to say what we wanted, and that was what we call a concession, which is we'll specify the service, we'll invest in it, define exactly what it is and integrate it into the transport system, and particularly address that fares issue that you mentioned, and then ask contractors to focus on the operation, which is a quality operation. Everybody loves it.
Everybody loves it when it goes right, don't they? So, I mean, what do you make then of what we've heard announced in this white paper? Does it go far enough? I mean, it seems to be going pretty much sort of starting from scratch again, doesn't it?
Basically, I think it's quite strongly hyped, of course, and it's a very long time coming, that the franchise system, which is about private operators, private meaning foreign railways in a lot of cases, fixing fares, and it all depends on revenue risk. And that died prior to COVID, and it was stone dead during COVID, of course, and the railways have got to recover. They can't just go back to that. It has to be something prescribed against the real purpose of the railways. So that model, I think, will be adopted. The other issue is the infrastructure. The infrastructure in Manchester is a good example where there isn't enough of it. Network Rail actually manages the system extremely well, actually. And it's a safe railway. And in most areas, quite a quality railway. But the problem is there isn't enough of it. And so Network Rail has to use the infrastructure very carefully. So basically, to have a new body that brings Network Rail in so that the infrastructure is actually used as part of the equation rather than everybody punting and throwing the trains at it, and it doesn't work. So it has to be a planned approach, and that's the big change. And it's very welcome change.
So do you think... Do you think that this will just lead to a more joined up approach, you know, across the different organisations that are working on our rail system?
A joined up approach in terms of planning, but it isn't a vertical integration of track and train that people have talked about, or a regional structure. It just means that Network Rail have a say in the use of what goes on their tracks. We've also seen that freight's important as well, and that's got to get a show. So it needs a national system, but it needs local input. It has to work for the City of Manchester or London, for instance.
Let me read you a text that we've just had from Stacey in Sussex. She says, good morning. I work in construction in London and have been commuting most days throughout. Since December, the trains on my line have been halved and one service stopped altogether. Since February, the trains have been getting busier and busier, and I have seen arguments and fights due to the impossibility of maintaining social distancing. It's shameful the trains are now subsidised by the taxpayer, yet the service is awful, packed and frequently late. Ian, is this going to fix that?
Well, basically, the service was cut back and utilisation of the railway went down to about 5% of passenger levels. So it's not surprising that the government cut the service back. The key question now is bringing it back and funding it with some sort of interim situation, because this new arrangement doesn't start for several years till the white paper comes into. So we need something now that actually builds the service back to previous levels, in fact, higher than previous levels, to allow for social distancing. Generally, in some areas, that happens. In others, it's not so good, as you've just said.
Now, we're going to see, as you say, I think it's not till 2023 that this new body is going to be launched. But we are going to see some of these changes coming into force sooner, aren't we? Including those flexible rail tickets for people who no longer need to commute maybe 5 days a week, but still want to be able to buy a bit of a flexible ticket. Do you think that that is going far enough to reflect how railway use has changed because of the pandemic?
Well, the flexible ticketing was an initiative that's been going on completely separate from the Williams Review. It was delayed, and now it's been bundled into that, which is fine. I think traffic will come back on the railway. The big concern is commuting in its old format. So we need a flexible product that people can actually use the train for several days a week, which is great. But it also needs a simple fare structure for the whole country. And one of the advantages of Transport for London, it has an Oyster card and it's really easy to use. And one of its successes was the fact you could just use it without even thinking about it as part of a journey. Mm. At the moment, the National Rail Service is moving towards advanced reservations. You've got to think days in advance what you want to do. The lack of flexibility. It's not a walk-on product in some areas. So I think there's a wholesale approach required to ticketing to make it something that people can just use, like putting petrol in a car and go.
Well, listening to you is John Henderson, a member of the Bedford Commuters Association. John, you represent a rail commuters group then. What is rail like in your area? Is it working?
Well, generally, Felicity, rail in the Bedford area is pretty good. It has been pretty good for the past few years. That is in terms of trains running on time. One particular problem we have is with trains to places like Nottingham and Leicester, where the service has been cut. That's really a problem for us. And I do hope that the new GBR will be a lot more communicative than the DFT. The problem we've had over the past years is that the only way we can communicate with the DFT is through our MPs. And that's been difficult. As Ian said, flexible fares and smart cards will be the key issues over the next short term anyway.
Mm. Let me read you a text we've had from Spencer in Cheltenham. He says, with reference to the new train governing body, let's not kid ourselves here. The only thing that will change will be the different name above the door. I mean, you're saying you hope for more communication, more ease of communication. Do you think that what you've seen outlined is going to make it easier for you to express what your commuters need?
To be honest, I don't know at the moment. The devil will be in the detail. Mm. We'll have to see, you know, what our members are looking for. There is really an independent body from the government, or as reasonably independent as it can be, so that they can have, as Ian said, they can set up a really good 21st century flexible fare system where, yes, you just walk up like putting petrol in your car, and a system that's good value for money, because of course we've had these RPI plus 1% increases over the years, and that's a source of bitterness, really.
That is a very, very good point, isn't it? Ian Brown, people do not like rising train fares. Every year when they rise, you know, we get a lot of complaints here at Wake Up to Money, a lot of texts, a lot of tweets. Do you think that the kinds of changes that are being outlined in this white paper will potentially bring fares down or keep fares down? Or do you think that that's just, you know, the investment that's needed is just going to mean they have to keep rising?
I think it's desperately important to move away from not having any extra efficiency in the railway. And RPI plus one is piling it on every year. What we've got to see in our position is CPI, the consumer price index, is what people pay. And it should be that. And it shouldn't be plus one. So we've got to stop this inevitable automatic rise, which the railway gets. We've got to have a more cost-effective railway as part of this. It's not clear how that actually happens as a result of what's been said so far, but the devil's obviously in the details. So the answer to us is CPI, not RPI plus one, so I agree with the previous speaker.
The message from both of you is that the devil is in the detail. John, if you could make any improvements, if you were in charge of overseeing the huge seismic shift we're potentially going to see, what are the main things that you would want to address?
Well, We would want to see an extension of something like the Oyster system to Bedford, so that you can just tap and go over long distances, right through London, not just into central London, but to all the London stations and beyond. And the other thing we would like to see is restoring the railway electrification program that the government cancelled, so that we can have a fast and green service to places like Nottingham and Leicester.
Thank you both very much. That was John Henderson, a member of the Bedford Commuters Association, and Ian Brown, Policy Director at the rail campaign group Rail Future, who also used to be MD of London Rail and Transport for London. Thanks for joining us.